supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. We had a technical problem about 6 minutes ago, and we aired the wrong billboard. Today's show is actually about flirting, something most of you know about, something all of you do. It's about flirting, what it is, what it does, and why it's inevitable. So why do you flirt? Probably for the same reasons we all do. We just can't seem to help it. Seems we're programmed to do it, whether it's through our genetics or society. Temptation is everywhere, but it's how different sexes react to flirtation that determines the effects it will have. So, joining me now to discuss it further is Kathleen Guarneris, a clinical psychologist who works with business executives. Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Faye Flam, an old friend of the show and me. She's the science writer at the Philadelphia Inquirer, author of The Score, How the Quest for Sex Has Shaped Modern Man. Welcome to the show again.
Thanks, Dan.
And joining me on the phone is Dr. John Lydon. He's a professor of psychology at McGill University in Montreal and principal investigator of a new study on flirtation and its impact on primary relationships. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
And to you, my listeners, my friends, if you've got an hour to spare, why don't you listen in and, hey, give me a call. Number is 888-477-9499. Again, 888-477-9499. So, Faye, let's start with you. What is it?
What is flirting? I think if there was a simple explanation and a simple one-size-fits-all definition, there would be many fewer misunderstandings out there. I think there are differences in what men and women want out of flirting, how they interpret flirting of the opposite sex. I think there's an element of sexual tension. I think most people think of flirting as something where you sort of build some sort of sexual tension between you and somebody else. But then flirting can also be innocent, too. It's just not always seen the same way by both parties. So it seems like it's a way to you get attention.
So, Kathleen, is it kind of like love? You can't define it, but you know it when you found it?
That's actually a good question about it. I think that it has elements of that. I mean, if we think of at least a basic definition when you're thinking about it, is I think most people would agree from when they experience it or when they're doing it, there's a playfulness to it often. There's a lightness. As Faye said, it has a continuum of how harmless it might be or how very explicit and intentional it might be. But it can range from something like touching, eye contact, conversation, gestures, all really with the intent of having some type of chemistry and connection with another person that expresses an interest, and often that interest can be sexual. To your point, though, Dan, do we know it when we see it? Absolutely, because that's often when people either consciously or unconsciously decide to reciprocate or not reciprocate. So at a very underlying evolutionary level, that's how we communicate with each other. It's one of the earliest forms of communication, and we still use it today as humans to really be able to get data about somebody. Are they interested in me or not? Do they like me or not? Am I attracted to them or not?
I want to challenge you on something you said. You said that we absolutely know when we're being flirted with? I would just take a wild guess. The one gender knows it better than the other.
I would agree with that, yes.
So which gender are you guessing?
Well, there's both from my experience as a psychologist, but also what the evidence pretty much shows us in research from scientific studies, that men by and large, whether I think a combination of evolutionary reasons and socialization, tend to interpret behavior on the part of females as much more sexualized than it's sometimes intended. So if you will, men tend to have a more sexualized lens that they're walking around with. Women, on the other hand, are often socialized to be friendly, to make a conversation, to connect with people, to show empathy, but it often doesn't have sexual overtones. They might be interpreted that way by men.
I was guessing when I talked about gender differences, and Faye, I don't want you to react to my guess, that men would be less likely to pick up subtleties in flirtation than women.
Yeah, I think that could be the case. But I do think, I asked my fiancé about flirtation last night, and he said, you mean like picking up women? Like, to him, it's very goal-oriented. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Well, you flirt with a woman if you want to pick up on her. And I think it's that women are more likely to just do it to be friendly, or just to be friendly and have that interpreted as a more sexual form of flirting. So maybe the distinction is the flirting just friendly, mm-hmm. or is it a pickup?
So here's a question I have for you, Kathleen, that maybe a woman wouldn't ask. I don't know. The question is, if flirting is a natural phenomenon and a way of connecting with others, then theoretically, being in a committed relationship would not alter one's flirting behavior. Dead silence.
You mean flirting with
doesn't work on radio, team.
I know what I'm allowed to do and not allowed to do.
So are you talking about the flirting being committed stops you flirting with your partner or stops you flirting with other people? Or both?
The latter.
The other people.
Yeah.
Oh, I think there's plenty of flirtation out there among married people, which leads to a whole other issue of eliciting gossip
and
causing trouble.
Yeah, we're going to talk to John about that in a minute, but then what I'm saying is, being in a committed relationship, if this is natural, then being in a committed relationship theoretically shouldn't alter your flirting behavior. You should theoretically flirt when you're in a committed relationship just like you do when you're not. I want to hear that silence again.
Oh, no, I have a point to make.
Right,
this
here.
Is why I've always been attracted to shy people. I find shyness a very sexy quality. And I think some of it is that person is naturally shy. He's not going to go flirting with everybody after you're committed because he doesn't flirt before. I mean, people do. They do tend to have the same patterns of behavior. And I think that's why sometimes people who are really flirtatious, you know that they're just natural flirts. They're going to flirt with everybody forever.
Yes, it's almost a mix of the personality as well as the context, too. And even within committed relationships, flirting often can be an initiating, if you will, until you establish more intimacy with someone. Once the intimacy is there, there still might be flirty behavior here and there within a committed relationship, but it changes developmentally, I think, over the time. And even from that point of view, early in a commitment, that might test the relationship. But later, 20 years into a marriage, someone actually might have some flirtatious behavior that's very harmless versus more with more negative connotations if they're interested in cheating.
All right, I want to turn to John and his study, but I need to clarify something with you, Faye. Actually, I need to recover from something you just said.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You said you tend to be attracted to men who are shy, who wouldn't flirt. Does that mean you weren't flirting with me earlier?
Oh, I didn't say that. I didn't say that I don't flirt.
Okay.
That I just said there is something about shy people that and non-flirtatious people that can be attractive too, and so they shouldn't feel like they're going to go unnoticed if they don't flirt because there's an upside to it.
Okay. So you were flirting.
Yeah.
Okay. So, John, why don't you take over the show now? Because I'm a happy boy. I'm just gonna... John. Tell us about your study. You studied college-age students who were in committed relationships.
Yes.
So tell us what you looked at.
Okay. Well, first, before moving on to that, I like what Kathleen said about when she said people absolutely know, she said it could be unconscious. And I think that's something important to keep in mind with this is that someone can flirt with you, and you may not be sitting there and consciously thinking about that in an explicit way, but you may still experience in an implicit way and pick up this pleasant interaction and this sense of interest from the other person. I think that's important. And so one of the first things we wanted to see is, well, how would people respond to the flirtation of the other person? And so if you're in a committed relationship, how do you deal with that? And do men and women even think about that in a different way before we then went on to see, well, what consequence would that have for how you would then treat your partner? And so the first thing we did was, without even having a person there, they just visualized a pleasant interaction with an attractive person, the opposite sex. And after that, we asked people, we said, well, before we get on to the important stuff, we want to sort of cleanse your mind of all that. So we have a word game for you to do for a few minutes. But of course, that word game was something we cared about. And people would get word fragments like, one was B, the letter B, E, blank, A, blank, E. And men were more likely to complete the word became. Women were more likely, after thinking of the attractive person, to write beware. Wow. And so we were getting things where women would write beware, men would write became. Men would fill in a word fragment with the word, women would write threat, and men would write throat. We had one, it was L-O blank A-L, and men wrote local. Women were more likely to write loyal. So there was already evidence at this sort of implicit level that when they think of these interactions with attractive people of the opposite sex, for women, issues of threat, relationship, commitment come to mind, but not for the men. So that already suggested, oh, there's something different going on here. Now then the question is, would that make a difference in how you treat your partner?
So that shows us two things, and I want to try to get to the roots of it. The difference between men and women, it also shows us that we should never trust a research psychologist when they say they're going to cleanse your mind.
Cleanse your mind, right? Because, you know, we don't want to just say, oh, well, when you have a situation like this, you know, what would you do? What would it mean for your relationship? Because then we're making it very explicit. And it might be, when you make it very explicit, men might say, oh, right, that's right, I should be careful. But we want to know, in the moment, when you're not having the chance to stop and carefully deliberate and analyze this, you know, what would just sort of naturally come to mind?
So what was the result? What happened when they were actually exposed?
So then we did a series of lab experiments where we had a person in the room who is an attractive person of the opposite sex, and half the time they thought that person was single, and half the participants thought the person was married. And we wanted to see, with just the availability of that person, and the person would have a nice interaction. You know, it's interesting when you were talking before about things like touching and eye contact. And so we trained our confederates, although I think the rest of the panel will be interested that we had to do it in slightly different ways for the male and female confederates. So the female confederate, you know, of course, in both cases, lots of eye contact showing interest in the participant. But the female confederate, at one point, tells the guys, oh, I was in another experiment. You wouldn't believe what they told me I'd have to do. And she starts laughing. She takes her hand and she just innocently just brushes it across the top of his leg. She makes contact. Whereas with the males, we said, they can't do that. That would be too much for a guy that the women just met, for him to actually start doing that sort of touching. But in both cases, a lot of interest. And
so what impact did this all have on their primary?
So the men did what traditional theories of commitment would expect, which is, if you increase the availability of alternatives, you decrease people's motivation in terms of commitment. And so the men showed less willingness 10 minutes later to say they would forgive their dating partner for bad behavior, for transgressions. So they have the nice interaction with the attractive female, and if they thought she was single. 10 minutes later, they reported less willingness to be forgiving of their dating partner.
And the women?
The women did the complete opposite, which was, it's not even that there was no difference between conditions for women. Women actually increased their willingness to forgive their partner after that interaction.
All right, now, I'm going to ask you this question, John, before I turn to Kathleen and Faye. What does this tell us other than they are better than we are?
What we believe is there are two things in play, but I'll just talk about one here, is that in these situations, we think women have learned over time this sort of strategy, and they're well equipped with it. If attractive guy approaches, then defend the relationship. And that's just there. It's quick. You don't have to stop and really think about it. The men, we're saying, they're not equipped with this strategy that works in a quick, effortless way. But the men can be trained. And so we showed in our final study that men can do this. But women, they sort of already had this sort of habitual response to the situation.
This behavior, to me, sounds pretty evolutionary behavior, and I don't know about training evolution. Faye, you're having a reaction.
Well, I do deal with that a lot in my book. I mean, my first thought isn't, you know, that women are better, but women have such a bad deal with this interaction. So it's actually negative for the relationship for the woman. I mean, there have been a lot of studies about cheating, and women are prone to cheat. I mean, female animals are prone to cheat on their males, but there's a slightly different dynamic to it. I think males in general in most species, including humans, have less of an investment in offspring when it comes to sex. There's less risk for them. They don't get pregnant. So males can be more opportunistic when it comes to sex and extramarital, extra relationship sex. And females, there are a lot of theories about females sort of sensing genetic quality in males, trying to, but there's still more at stake. So there's more. It's not something a female does lightly. So maybe having another attractive male just doesn't offer the same thing somehow. It doesn't give her whatever leverage it seems to give the male in thinking, oh yeah, I guess I don't really need her as much. it's a sad conclusion. It wasn't what I would have wanted to see from that.
John, we're gonna have to take a short break and say goodbye to you. Let me just ask you one last quick question. Your study focused on college age men and women.
Yeah.
Why that? What would you expect to be different, if anything, if you studied older folks?
We think that in one important respect, there may be a difference with older folks, but in another, quite similar. So the similarity would be even if you had married men, they may not have learned over time this habitual response of if attractive female approaches, then defend the relationship. So they might need the training that we gave these college-age men in our final study, and the men in that study did respond well to it. But where there is a difference, and we've done in other papers, we've reported that men seem to need more time to incorporate their romantic relationship into their identity and to really think in terms of a we, whereas women do that with their relationships in general, whether it's their parents, their friends, their romantic partner, and that has consequences for things like commitment-motivated behavior. So we had a paper we called The Commitment Shift in Men, and when does that happen? And so we expect married men, in some respects, are more ready to do things like idealize their partner in ways that protect the relationship, whereas women seem to do that as soon as they start dating.
Right.
So that sense of identity men later in the dating relationship seem to incorporate the relationship would be helpful, but the strategy, the if-then strategy, might not be there.
John, remind us where your study was published, please.
In the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology.
Thank you. And okay. And thanks for joining us.
No problem.
That was John Lydon. He's a professor of psychology at McGill University in Montreal, and he was the principal investigator of that study we've been talking about. We're talking about flirtation today on the show, what it is, why we do it, what it means, how men and women do it differently, why some people are really good at it and others just don't seem to be. We're going to talk about that more after the show, and we're going to take a look more carefully at Kathleen's expertise, which is flirting in the workplace. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. I only want people who flirt to call or who have been flirted with. We're restricting it to that. So my guests are Kathleen Guarneris. She's a clinical psychologist who works with business executives. And Faye Flam is a science writer at the Philadelphia Inquirer, author of The Score, How the Quest for Sex Has Shaped Modern Man. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
During the 2007 mayoral election, citizens ranked crime the number one issue facing the next mayor. The man who is tasked with addressing this concern is Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey. If you could ask him anything right now, what would it be? We're going to give you a chance. You can email your questions to city@whyy.org. We'll pose them to the commissioner during a special It's Our City interview. For more information, whyy.org/city.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about flirtation, why you do it, what it means to you, and what it means to the person you're flirting with. My guests are Faye Flam, a science writer at the Philadelphia Inquirer, author of The Score, How the Quest for Sex Has Shaped Modern Man. Kathleen Guarneris, clinical psychologist who works with business executives, and our number is 888-477-9499. Faye, your title, How the Quest for Sex Has Shaped Modern Man?
Yeah. It's, well, it deals with the evolution of males from the beginning, from the primordial slime up to today. And so there is something called sexual selection, which actually does shape the evolution of all living things. And the book deals with that a lot. I mean, it's really a book about the male sex, human males, animal males, plant males, all kinds of males.
So consistent with that. Your book starts with Seduction Boot Camp.
Right, which is sort of like flirtation, but it's very goal-directed.
So what are the skills men need to learn?
Well, you know, I actually sat in on a very long seminar for men who wanted to learn these things. And one of the techniques that they talked about over and over was projecting a little bit of lack of availability, a little bit of mystery, that a lot of guys make the mistake of sort of getting up in people's faces, you know, making the woman think, how do I get rid of this guy? I'm sure we've all had that sense.
Yes.
at a social function or a party where somebody comes up to talk to you and you're thinking, well, he's okay, but how do I get rid of him? And so a lot of what they teach guys is sort of how to kind of limit how much flirting you do and walk away, you know, be a little mysterious, a little distant, not too pushy.
So it's also what guys need to learn is how to avoid being repulsive, for lack of a better
word. Repulsive is a little strong, but even just annoying might be a better word. So it's always sort of a walking a tightrope, I think, to flirt. You don't want to be pushing the other person. You have to be subtle. So maybe I think some of it is subtlety, also picking up the cues from the woman, trying to figure out if she's interested so that he can move on and stop wasting his time if she's not interested. So some of it was also trying to help men develop their perception of other people's interest and emotions.
Kathleen, when we were on a break, you talked about attractiveness being a significant factor. What do you mean by attractiveness, and who's attractive to which gender?
Well, Dan, I was saying that in relation to the study with that John had conducted out of Mickle University, that one of the variables was having an attractive person of the other sex flirt with each of the subjects. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about if they had changed that variable to a certain amount of wealth or status with the female subjects, if that would have changed. Because we know from a lot of research that men and women, of course, I think it's pretty common knowledge. You don't need to be a psychologist or a researcher to know that many of us evaluate people in attractiveness as potential mates or somebody we may flirt with. But when we extend that out and really look between the sexes of where there can be a variable, men very much are not only from an evolutionary standpoint, but also have been socialized to evaluate women in some way against each other based on attractiveness. So that can become one of the higher priorities in terms of who they may choose to flirt with. For women, that can be one of the variables, but a lot of women will look not only to personality factors, but also one of the wild cards may be attracted to a man who has a certain amount of power or wealth status, and that can be a different variable. So it could have different implications in terms of how you evaluate your own partner in a committed relationship.
Well, it's also got evolutionary implications.
It does.
I mean, historically, men were attracted to women with broader hips, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth, and you know, in modern times, men are attracted to attractive women, mm-hmm. and women would be more attracted to a man with a good personality, with social economic power, meaning good genes.
That's right. And I think it's just manifested in contemporary society different than it was on the plains, but it's still some of the basic, still some of the fundamental ways that we might be attracted to people, especially unconsciously.
Let's go to the phones. We got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. We'll start with Sonia. Sonia, you there?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to comment on the gentleman who observed that men are less forgiving of their dating partner after engaging in flirtation, and women are more forgiving. And I wondered if that's a manifestation of social expectations. For example, does the man think, oh, all women flirt, I can't trust my own dating partner, women are guilty of flirting? And does the woman feel guilty for taking any kind of pleasure, and therefore is more forgiving of her partner for transgressions?
Well, it's an interesting question. I'll turn to my experts, and unfortunately John's not with us anymore, but I'll turn to our experts. I'm more inclined to agree with your guess about women than men. Anybody have a thought about that?
Well, it does come up in a lot of evolutionary studies of humans and other animals, that because there is this fundamental asymmetry that men can't be sure that the children they're taking care of are biologically theirs, at least not until we had DNA testing. And women pretty much know if the baby came out of them, it's theirs. So there's that biological asymmetry can lead to behavioral differences where the male is more possessive. I think that is generally the case with humans, that men are more possessive in their relationships. And so women are going to be more forgiving. You just look at the way even today men can talk about their past girlfriends, and women don't think, oh my God, he slept with somebody before me. But we still have to be a little careful. You know, it's a touchy subject. Men sometimes still have trouble thinking about their partner having had other sex partners before them.
Kathleen, you are... Sonia, I hope that answered your question.
Yes, it's kind of, I was thinking about the protectiveness of the passing along the genetic material. And real quickly, is extroverted behavior considered flirting only when it's with the opposite sex or the potential dating partner?
Kathleen?
Sonia, for example, eye contact, touching.
Well, certainly if there are two homosexual individuals, then I would say that it can be same sex and we would consider it flirting. I think by definition, if it's two women, I think that's what your question is. Or are you saying just if it's so heterosexual but it's not with sexual intent, Sonia?
Well, I'm wondering, hearing the definition or the description of flirtatious behavior, I'm wondering, and the interpretation depending on gender, how many times women think they're just being friendly when it's being interpreted as, oh, she's a flirt.
Right. I think, generally speaking, some people have flirtier personalities even than other people, and I think that's where we'd make it a definition of, or generally speaking, we would say flirting or not flirting based on the context and the intent. Certainly, I think earlier we had talked in the discussion that men, by and large, tend to interpret certain behaviors in a more sexual light than women would or women had intended. So in that sense, yes, a woman can very much just be friendly, making eye contact, making morning conversation over coffee, and it's potentially misinterpreted, and it's not flirting.
Sonia, thanks for your call. I want to pick up on something you said, a phrase you just said, flirtier personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about that. What is a flirtier personality?
Some people by nature are absolutely extroverted. They engage other people in their world quite often. They live out loud, if you will. And that might be, there's an animation to them. There's a good deal of expressiveness to them. They might tell jokes. They might, for a woman, it might be giggling quite often, a silliness. For a man, that could be having a conversation with lots of the ladies that he works with, that even though he could be in a committed relationship, so I'm trying to say how it could be manifested as a flirty personality. But these people otherwise would be friendly to most people. So you might have heard the phrase, somebody will say, oh, he's just a big flirt, don't mind him. And that person's partner could even know that this person is almost joked about for flirty behavior, but it's very benign. It's very benevolent. It doesn't mean anything. It's actually just friendliness. But they tend to be people who are very personable and comfortable in social settings, and they pick up on other people in terms of what their interests are, and they make conversation quite often.
I ask because I've been accused of being a big flirt, which offends me. I'm not big. let's go back to the phones. We've got Christopher on the line. Christopher?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
That leads right into my question. Is I was wondering what the role of self-esteem is in flirting.
That's a great question. Great question. Kathleen?
I think self-esteem plays a huge role in flirting. Going also to even when people have flirtier personalities, quote unquote, that there's a confidence, there's an exuberance to life, I think, that comes out of the self-esteem. It's coming from your own center and feeling a lot of self-worth to say, I'm going to engage this other person. I'm going to find out more about them and tell them about myself.
Christopher, thanks for your call. I want to pick up on what you said and follow up something you said, Faye. The issue of self-esteem, that when you flirt out of kind of yourself, your center, your comfort with who you are, it comes across one way. But when you flirt out of anxiety or hunger or desperation or grasping, then you might become one of those people who needs to take that course you talked about.
Well, everybody sometimes runs into trouble. You know, it's not that easy out there. So I think the course might be extreme. But there was a study that I wrote about in the book that was sort of interesting on people who did a speed dating type thing where you chat with members of the opposite sex for a couple of minutes. And people were actually able to tell who was the pickiest of their opposite sex prospective dates. And the ones that they liked the most were the ones they deemed the least picky. So they could actually sort of smell desperation through the the interaction.
Which they?
The women and the men. The men really? Could pick it up too. Both sexes could pick up who was picky and who wasn't among the opposite sex.
Wow.
And both of them, for both of them, it was a measure of, it influenced the attractiveness.
I think there's an energy in there too, because it's not just what's said, it's but the energy that goes with that.
I want to talk to Lisa, who's got a question about the good news and flirtation in a marriage. Lisa?
Question, and thank you for taking my call, sure. Is how to keep flirtation alive in a marriage.
So?
Hello?
Yeah. So,
how do you keep flirtation alive in a marriage?
Especially a marriage where you hear a crying baby in the background.
Hello?
So does flirtation, can it help?
I think you have to do it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even married yet. I'm just engaged. But I feel like in a way, the woman has to keep that up. I don't know. I think men can get, maybe this is just me, I think men can get complacent and feel like, oh, I don't have to flirt with her anymore now that she's agreed to marry me. But it can take the fun out of your relationship if you stop flirting. So I think it's definitely good if both people just try to keep doing it.
Flirting with each other.
With each other, yeah.
What about outside the marriage? Can flirtation help a marriage if you flirt outside of the marriage, Kathleen?
Well, I think that's a tricky issue. Very briefly, I'm going to mention, I think it's absolutely essential in a marriage. And speaking of babies, I have a 7-month-old, so I can relate, and I've been married 10 years. So speaking from experience, I think it's a playfulness and a lack of seriousness at times that you need inside of a marriage to keep things fresh and to keep growing and seeing each other differently. With that said, so what happens developmentally in the course of a marriage? I think in many ways, the flirting within the marriage can be enhanced, not necessarily by active flirting outside of the marriage, especially if the line I would draw for other people and for myself, but if I think about the range of marriages, is what would make your spouse feel uncomfortable? And that can be different for different people, and that's why it's a little bit of a complex answer. But there can be a lighthearted banter that you might develop with a neighbor, a friend, that at its intent must be benign if it's at all to help the marriage in terms of making you go back to your partner and say, oh, I want to go on a playful date this weekend. But beyond that, it can really be a slippery slope.
Well, you talked about the unconscious nature of flirting. Mm-hmm. And as a marital therapist, how many times have I heard the story of one partner or the other saying, all of a sudden, mm-hmm. I discovered that I'm okay, I'm not being criticized, or somebody finds me attractive and I haven't felt that in my marriage. So maybe one rule of thumb is that if there's unhappiness in the marriage, deal with the unhappiness yes. in the marriage and don't try to get mm-hmm. healed by getting nurtured on the outside. That could be dangerous.
Right, it's like what type of motivation do you have for doing it? But it is hard because it's so instantaneous.
Lisa, thanks for your call. She left us. Well, anyway, thanks for your calls. The baby calls. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back. We're talking about flirtation, what it is, what it does, what it means, why we do it, and why we will never, ever stop. My guests are Kathleen Guarneros. She's a clinical psychologist, works with business executives, and Faye Flam is a science writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She's the author of The Score, How the Quest for Sex Has Shaped Modern Man. Our number is 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Rock, pop, jump, thump, rock and roll. Drugstores rockin'.
From Janis Martin to Wanda Jackson, they were the unsung heroes of rock and roll. I'm Rosie Flores. Join me as we meet the original female rockers, the Rockabilly Phillies, on Whole Lotta Shakin' from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
Next time on Day to Day, they eat human flesh. and people love it.
Isn't that the strangest thing?
At a Virginia salon, people pay to have some 200 tiny carp nibble at their feet.
Feels really weird. Oh my gosh.
Look, you're picking. Pick, pick, pick.
Introducing the fish pedicure.
I'm telling you, your feet never feel so clean.
Thank you for feeling my fish.
Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about flirting. My guests are Faye Flam, science writer at The Inquirer, author of The Score, How the Quest for Sex Has Shaped Modern Man. As she says, their evolution from slime to today's man. And Catherine Granaris, a clinical psychologist who works with business executives who started off at Goldman Sachs in human relations and went on to get her PhD in psychology. So let's start with that. One of your specialties is women in the workplace, especially executive women. You've said that men and women look at their own norms through different lenses. What do you mean?
From both our evolutionary underpinnings, so just a lot of how we're hardwired, as well as what has shaped us along the way biologically for survival and motivate some of our behavior, but certainly from a socialization standpoint. Women, it's very complex for women, especially if you think of the workplace. It's very complex because we have been socialized to be friendly, to be sweet, to have conversations with people, to reciprocate when there's an exchange made with us. Simultaneously, as women have really changed their roles in society, gender roles have changed on the outside, but they really haven't changed internally. So our internal scripts, I would say, have not caught up with how contemporary society has changed. And women, on the one hand, have been socialized for how to use sexuality in both positive ways as well as to gain power that can have more negative implications. It's very complex in that way. And for that reason, some of their behavior is sometimes intended sexually, but some of our behavior is not intended sexually. And what can happen with men, going back to your original question, is that men have been socialized in a different way, both in terms of how they view the world, which tends, compared to women, to have a more sexualized lens on, if you will, when they're interpreting other people's mm-hmm. behavior, both consciously and unconsciously. And also about how they view women and how they evaluate women, which often has a sexual undertone to it.
Well, I also wonder about the context of today's world in the workplace. I met Lisa Walters, one of our producers, this morning. Hadn't seen her in a week, and I said, "Hey, is anybody from human relations around?" She said, "No." I said, "Well, quick, give me a hug." it was a complete joke there, but I mean, it really does reflect. I mean, here's a woman I care about. I wanted a hug. But, you know, in this world of political correctness, mm-hmm. often what feels right and good, we shouldn't do or couldn't do anymore. So how does flirting work? This is where we spend most of our lives, at the workplace.
Absolutely. It's very complex. Flirting itself is complex behavior because right. at its core, it's how we gather information about somebody else. Americans are spending more time than ever in the workplace, more women than ever in the workplace, and more women are in the workplace than ever who have positions of power as well, or who may one day have a position of power or who aspire to that. So what seems like very simple behavior, such as is it okay to flirt or isn't it okay to flirt, it would be great if there was just a nice, quick, easy answer for this, but there isn't. It really comes down to context and judgment in terms of who's in a position of power. Thinking through some of the implications if you are going to flirt someone and it's going to lead somewhere, especially because flirting, as we've said before during the hour, can start to creep up on people without them even realizing it. Often starts to creep in as a behavior once chemistry has developed with a colleague.
And that's what I hear in my office every time there's been an affair in a I don't know how it happened. All of a sudden it happened. That's the story I hear. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Wally on the line.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You just brushed up against the question I had, or the comment, is that as women's roles have changed in the workplace, what might have been natural flirting and something benign, as you've talked about, now becomes harassment. And how do you judge the boundary? And it seems like one of the challenges between the different ways that men and women perceive sexuality or flirting, if a woman does it, it might be innocent, or it might be a way of her to exert power in a situation. If a man does it, it's harassment. It's probably true also in some educational setting. If you could just comment on that a little bit, I'll listen to your comments on the air.
Thanks, Wally. Kathleen, that's you first.
Wally, I think that was the gentleman's name. I think you hit the nail on the head that it comes down to judgment, and it is difficult. It is the reality is we are in a politically correct atmosphere, especially in North America. We have deep puritanical roots, which I think creeps into this in terms of a discomfort with sexuality compared to some other cultures that I work with, actually, in terms of men and women really just having a rapport with one another and a chemistry.
Just as an aside, our puritanical roots fully explain why pornography is a multi-billion-dollar business. But that's an aside.
Right. Go on. Like I said, it's very complicated. Complicated. But in terms of work behavior, I think the boundary line should be drawn on what might make somebody uncomfortable or comfortable. If someone, and that's going to vary by the culture of the organization. There's, as Dan had said about hugging, there are some companies that I work with that everybody walks around and hugs. And it's almost self-selects for people who are like that. Those are also been companies that I have found more affairs in and more more nebulous boundaries between the people who run the company and people who work for them. So it has both positive implications. Some people like that atmosphere. But the fallout can be that there are not clear boundaries around personal relationships. Companies that are a little bit more buttoned up, I would say, it's not that it doesn't occur, but there are really the norms that guide their behavior that we all have that are unwritten norms are much more explicit in the air if you look around, that it's there's more formality. So you have to judge it based on the culture that you're working with and based on some of the cues that you're seeing from other people. You would want to dip your toe in the water if, for example, there was somebody you might be interested in. It's safer to comment upon them making a good presentation than it is upon the blouse that they're wearing, for example. So there's appropriate ways that you could do that.
Well, let me turn to you. Speaking of what people wear, I mean, people can flirt non-verbally, and they can flirt by what they wear. So is there a difference, Faye, in what impact it has or whether people are conscious of it?
Well, and here there's a sex difference, too, because I don't think men flirt with what they wear, really. It's more of a female thing. And
we tried in the 70s
with
the shirt unbuttoned to the navel.
Oh, yeah, that was
had the opposite effect.
But I think women can also, there are hazards for women flirting in the workplace, and men sometimes, they're upset about this specter of sexual harassment. But for a woman, if you flirt, the next thing you know, people are talking behind your back that you've been sleeping with the guy, and you can get informed later by some other gossip that, oh yeah, you're sleeping with him. Like, wait a minute. I mean, and that can reflect badly on you, even unconsciously. I think it can affect whether people take you seriously, how they see you at work. And if it's a man getting gossiped about, it doesn't affect him the same way. I think people just don't see him as diminished in some way.
And the flip side for women as well, it's a very delicate balance that women in the workplace have to walk a fine line, because the flip side is if they're too serious and always boundaried, if you will, and always buttoned up, then they can be labeled opposite, not friendly, not approachable, especially if they start to rise in any visibility. Not that they have to be flirtatious, but again, going to that need to be friendly and warm to people.
Well, I hate to bring a very complicated question up with just a few minutes left in the show, but that's the issue of affairs in the workplace. And they do happen, and as you said when we spoke to you before the show, Kathleen, that they happen with a good amount of frequency. How does one navigate those borders? You're having an affair, or even a pre-affair, where the relationship is intense, and you're in a marriage or a committed relationship, how do you decide where to go, how to do it? If you decide to invest in your marriage, how do you deal with this person who you're seeing for 8 hours a day every day?
You're right, that is a very complicated question. My quick answer would be, you are going to have some of the best judgment in your life, because this is not just something, this affects all of your worlds. It has both the obvious short-term implications, but the long-term implications are very serious. So my advice, if you will, would be to have someone that you trust, tell them the situation if there is somebody, so that you can have some type of objective party helping you think through the different steps, whether that's you're staying in a marriage versus, you know, you're breaking up with this person, whatever that may be.
Yeah, Faye, Kathleen talked about needing to have great judgment, and it's tough for any individual to have great judgment when you've got all these hormones coursing through your body and really impairing your brain, which is what happens when you've got those hormones.
But I think we also have, you know, as much as I talk about biology in my book, we also have the power to act on our own free will and our better judgment. So I think that monogamy is definitely possible, that people aren't inevitably drawn into affairs because they have a biological drive to do it. So that said, you know, I still believe in that it's possible to be faithful in a long-term relationship, even if you're surrounded by other attractive people at work.
Hard to do.
It's hard to do, but people do it.
Who's more likely to succeed and fail, Kathleen?
In what sense?
Monogamy.
Generally speaking, women. I think we're wired that way. I think women still, you know, certainly there's a rise of women having affairs, but I think women and men tend to have them for different reasons. And overall, I think if women's emotional needs are met within the marriage, then they don't really stray in the marriage quite as often as men would.
And the research is consistent with what you've just said. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We could go on for another hour. This has been fun. I want to thank you both so much. And thanks to the listeners. My guests have been Dr. Kathleen Guarneros and Faye Flam. Guarneros is a clinical psychologist who works with business executives. Flam is a science writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She's author of The Score, How the Quest for Sex Has Shaped Modern Man. Well, if you want to reach us, we're at voices@whyy.org. You can also find archived editions of the show online. You can reach me directly at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Voices in the Family is co-produced by Elisa Walters and Geeta Simons, and I flirt not shamelessly with all three of those women. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Enjoy your week, my friend.
Day to day.